Thank you for inviting me. I'm happy to be here. How did I first meet low-dose naltrexone? A patient arrived in my office one day. He had been to a large medical center. He had prostate cancer. It was in his bones. He had terrible arthritis, rheumatoid. He was also diagnosed with lupus, and he was told he was going to die. He asked me to treat him with narcotics because he had a son who was mentally retarded. He said he couldn't die. He had to take care of this kid. And I said I would. I would treat him. Then he asked me if I ever heard of Dr. Bahari. And I said, no, I didn't. And he said he heard that he was reversing cancer in many people. I asked him, what are you doing in my office? What were you doing at MD Anderson Cancer Hospital? Why were you at the Mayo Clinic? I get right on a plane and get up there and see him. This is over 8 years ago. Well, he went up there. I didn't see him for three years. He was supposed to die in several weeks. He walked into the office without his walker, looked completely normal. And I asked him, how are you doing? He said, well, I have some kind of a sinus infection. I said, no, what about the cancer? He said, oh, it's not there anymore. I said, what about the rheumatoid arthritis? He said, it's gone. Well, I'm sort of a skeptical person, but I'm open to new ideas. I don't know how I ever became an MD. I was a PhD first. I started medical school in Chicago right out of college, and I wasn't mature enough. At that time, I didn't want to be an MD. I walked out. I went to the University of Illinois, got a master's degree and a PhD. My first job was a professor of microbiology at Rutgers University. I taught infectious diseases. And I picked up my MD later on. So I'm very heavy on education, and I'm not that heavy on medical training. However, I did train in internal medicine at one of the Case Western Reserve hospitals and also in pathology. While I was there, I discovered a chemical called alpha-lipoic acid. And I found that alpha-lipoic acid can regenerate livers. And published a paper out of National Institutes of Health. 79 people with terminal liver disease could not get a transplant for them. Published this. Nobody wanted to accept the publication in the United States. It was actually published in Germany. My research partner was Fred Barter, who was chief of endocrinology at NIH. Fred and myself went to Germany. We were visiting professors at the Max Planck Institute. When I got back to the university, they told me, why don't you stay in your laboratory and fiddle with your test tubes and teach your students? You'll have anything you want. Continue regenerating livers and treating liver patients. You'll be in big trouble here. We do liver transplants. So very early in my career, I found that there are certain agents that are not acceptable by standard medicine for one reason or another. Maybe they can't be patented. Maybe in the case of alpha-lipoic acid, they work for too many diseases. They reverse, lipoic acid reverses diabetic neuropathies, causes new blood vessels to grow into the toes of people who came to the Mayo Clinic for amputation. This has all been published. It causes new nerve regeneration, new blood vessels. It causes regeneration of livers. I think it does too many things. Well, this patient told me about the low-dose naltrexone. My wife had two aunts with terrible lupus. Nothing helped them. They were on all of those very potent drugs. They were on methotrexate and prednisone, and they just kept getting sicker and sicker. Put them on low-dose naltrexone. Within a month, they were completely normal, off all medications. Then I started using low-dose naltrexone for all of my people who were seeing rheumatologists, and I was having great luck with them too. Then a man came in with pancreatic cancer with metastases to the liver. He was a 46-year-old male. He presented to the emergency room with vague abdominal pains. A CAT scan was performed. It revealed a dense mass in the head of the pancreas and at least three lesions in the liver. Fine needle biopsy of the liver metastases revealed poorly differentiated adenocarcinoma. Here is a CAT scan taken October 8th of this gentleman. Following diagnosis, J.A. was sent to an oncologist for chemotherapy. He had a 21-day course. He became very sick. His white cell count fell. He couldn't clot his blood. The oncologist said there was no hope. He sought a second opinion from one of the most well-respected Texas University cancer centers. After a complete workup and review of his records and biopsies, the patient was told his condition was hopeless. He presented my office, and I consulted with him. He told me that he had a young son and did not want to die. I told him, I'm not an oncologist, however, I try to develop a program that might make his life easier for him. I changed his diet. I thought we could comfort him and modulate his immunity in a way. I suggested six servings of green and colored vegetables every day, limit the simple carbohydrates, stay away from sugar, because cancer seemed to thrive on sweets. Stay away from highly processed foods, drink plenty of clean water, various nutritional supplements. I gave him some Xanax at bedtime to calm him down, high fiber diet, pain medicines as needed. I thought he ought to be on vitamin D. Also encouraged him to get more sunlight and reduce the stress in his life. My first try was using that drug, that supplement, that agent that I held the FDA investigational drug permit for 23 years, alpha-lipoic acid, because I knew one of the things it did, it stabilized NF-kappa-B transcription factors, and this seemed to promote the growth of cancer cells. But it stabilized this transcription factor. But there wasn't much change in the patient's condition. So I added low-dose naltrexone, 4.5 milligrams at bedtime. This is the January 3rd CAT scan.
And it looks like he still has
metastases in the liver, but there really isn't much of a change. The course of events were uneventful as the patient continued on his ALA and naltrexone protocol. He went back to work full time, feeling normal. This is a CAT scan from February 24th, and there's really no change in the metastases. As the patient continued on his treatment plan, follow-up CAT scans were offered at regular intervals. Scans of April 2003 and June 2003 revealed no changes or new lesions. The patient felt so good with no symptoms of his disease that he voluntarily discontinued his treatment program. Still at work, feeling normal. I ordered another scan. The results demonstrated some disease advancement. As one might expect, J.A. and his wife were very disappointed. In December, he resumed the protocol, and since that time, he's continued to improve. This is June 2005. It's about the same. The tumor's about the same size. February 2006, it looks like the tumor's a bit smaller. And it also looks like the metastases are sort of smaller. Another pancreatic cancer patient, an 80-year-old female from California, presented with painless jaundice in California. CAT scan showed pancreatic head tumor with liver involvement. The doctors tried to place an internal biliary shunt. A biopsy was unsuccessful. Her pancreatic tumor marker was 356. She refused chemotherapy. This is a PET scan.
And there is the pancreatic tumor.
The PET scan, it lights up like a Christmas tree light. That was in January of 2006. We put her on the treatment, the low-dose naltrexone and also the lipoic acid. This is June 2006. Looks like the tumor's gone. Mr. RC, pancreatic cancer, 69-year-old male from Chicago. Post-prostate cancer treatment with chemotherapy, radiation, all sorts of things. Post-B-cell lymphoma treatment. Pancreatic cancer with metastases. I treated him with low-dose naltrexone at bedtime. Not very adherent to the lifestyle or diet or supplements, but he did take the low-dose naltrexone. This is the first PET scan, November 2006. Normal kidney accumulation of the PET scan fluid. But here are the pancreatic tumors and metastases. November 2006. February 2007.
These are the kidneys once more.
But the pancreatic tumors are gone, or at least they're not functional. Mr. TM had a B-cell lymphoma. 62-year-old male, owns construction business. The biopsy showed B-cell non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. This all started with a court case, great stress, a fight with his relatives. Then he developed an Epstein-Barr virus infection, which turned into a Bell's palsy, and then a lymphoma. And many doctors know that certain lymphomas are caused by Epstein-Barr virus. We put Mr. TM on 4.5 milligrams of low-dose naltrexone at bedtime, and this was the first PET scan, December 2005. What I'm pointing out are the diseased lymphoid tissue, the enlarged lymphoma glands in his neck and in his axillary regions. Let me do that again. And also in his groin. These were big tumors. One of them was as large as a softball. December 2005, May 2006, 6 months later. No sign of cancer. And this fellow was very non-compliant. He didn't do anything, but his wife made him take the low-dose naltrexone at bedtime. One of our papers, Reversal of Signs and Symptoms of a B-Cell Lymphoma Patient Using Only Low-Dose Naltrexone, Berkson, Rubin, and Berkson appeared in Integrative Cancer Therapies 2007, last month. Our first paper on pancreatic cancer appeared in Integrative Cancer Therapies in March of 2006. Incidentally, Mr. TM stopped all treatment after 6 months. When we called, his wife said he was fine and free of symptoms. Patient arrived back at our office in July, and it looked to me, after being off the low-dose naltrexone for a long period of time, that that lymphoma is returning. Anyway, the radiologist thought it was. And I don't know what he's doing now. I think he's gone to a conventional oncologist. Here is an 80-year-old male with metastatic breast cancer and metastatic colon cancer, great pain and distress, considered terminal by his oncologist, told that he'd probably die within a few weeks. Full of cancer. Almost all of those bright spots are metastases in his bone, in his lungs, all over the place. This was April. In August, we did another PET scan. By this time, he's free of symptoms and no distress. Looks like the cancers are still there, but they don't seem to be growing very much. He just went on a vacation, on a cruise. Said he feels great. Mrs. GB, pancreatic cancer, 6-year-old woman from California, told me that her religion does not allow standard medical therapy. And several of her relatives and friends have died from chemotherapy. Pancreatic cancer in the pancreas and the liver. Most of those bright spots are metastases. This is June 2007. September 2006, full of active cancer. June 2007, practically nothing, if anything. Actually, we have mixed results with cancer. You know, many patients do very well, and others die. I don't know if the people that die are doing something else too. But I have great results with rheumatoid arthritis and with systemic lupus erythematosus. And every time I see these results, I become very surprised. I'm amazed by them. Here's just some patients whose charts I pulled out at random. First, a patient with a rheumatoid factor of 96, within a short time it became negative. Mrs. VH, rheumatoid factor of 80, within a short time on low-dose naltrexone became negative. Just goes on and on and on like that. This is rheumatoid arthritis. Systemic lupus, the same results. I had one patient with rheumatoid arthritis, very nice lady. She did very well on low-dose naltrexone. She went through a period of great stress, and I prescribed a Medrol dose pack, which is a short-term steroid. And her symptoms were resolved. She went back to her rheumatologist for her yearly checkup, and he said that he had a great drug for her, Humira. And she came back to see me and said, "What do you think?" And I said, "Well, I've only seen horrible side effects with Humira. I mean, it'll make you feel better for a while, but most of these biological response modifiers have not lived up to my expectation. I've sold all of my stocks that made these products." The patient now has a B-cell lymphoma plus rheumatoid arthritis. And she developed the B-cell lymphoma very soon after she started the Humira. And some of the adverse effects of Humira are lymphoma, anaphylactic reactions, and death of bone marrow. Well, some personal comments, personal opinions. These are just a few interesting cases. Several people with cancer are alive and doing well. Several others are not doing well or have died. And I'm having the best results with lupus and rheumatoid arthritis. I think LDN deserves a large-scale clinical trial, but somebody's going to have to make money on this for this to occur. Not long ago, I was taking a course in hepatitis C at one of the big universities, and I asked some questions. And the professors did not know the answers, or they were embarrassed by the questions. It was a big, big audience. And they told me there'd be no more questions for the rest of the course. In fact, they told everybody that. And the next day, a gentleman spoke on new methods for treating hepatitis C. He said he's traveled all over the world. He's been to Japan, China, Finland, European countries, and nothing works as well as interferon, ribavirin, and liver transplantation. Well, I couldn't ask any questions, but I took off my tag and caught him in the hall. And I said, "Are you familiar with the Bergson treatment for hepatitis C?" He says, "Yes, I am." He says, "You know, it's amazing. There's so many people here on liver transplant lists. They go out and see this guy Bergson, and they come back with normal functioning livers. We take them off the list." He uses lipoic acid and some other things. And he said, "Well, what do you think the future of this treatment is?" He said, "I don't think it has any future, except for a few people to do some reading." I said, "Why not?" He said, "Do you know how much money it takes to get a drug through clinical trials and approved by the FDA?" I says, "No, but I bet it's a lot." He says, "It's probably over $1 billion now." He said, "Let me ask you a question. If you were a businessman and you invested hundreds of millions of dollars in a product, and when it came out, it didn't do what it was supposed to do, and it had horrible side effects, and then you found something that was cheap and easy, would you switch from your product to that cheap and easy product without any side effects? That efficacious product and lose all of your money? I don't think you would. He says, that's why interferon, ribavirin, and liver transplantation are going to be the major treatments for liver disease for a long time. I was reading Lancet not long ago, and I think this statement's very true. If everything has to be double-blinded, randomized, and evidence-based, where do new ideas come from? And practically, all of the new great ideas in medicine, you know, like Dr. Zagan and Dr. Bahari with low-dose naltrexone, come from people who have new ideas and think a little bit differently and are not afraid to practice a little bit out of the box. I think we still have a free country. That's it.